It's also tacitly a democratic view, because once you've got the idea that it's egalitarian, what's the best way to ensure that the happiness is distributed equally among people? Well, a democracy in which the decisions about the distribution of goods which will lead to happiness is made by that majority of people. So again, you find Bentham promoting this view in the context of an anti-monarchical view of society. So the idea would be, if you have a democracy, then each person can decide how goods should be distributed, and they do so in such a way as to maximise utilities for the most people in that society. So given the utilitarian aim of maximising utilities, you get an egalitarian perspective on things and a democratic view about how decisions should be made. So the utilitarian view is a politically progressive view, and it was perceived to be such at the time and thereby reviled by those who were politically not progressive, who wanted to hang on to hierarchies, monarchies and other forms of privilege for people and other kinds of systems of morality. So it's the view, utilitarianism is the view which actually applies to what we think of as Western liberal democracies. It's the view which we've basically absorbed into our systems and which we now more or less take for granted. The point I'm emphasising at the moment is it wasn't always so, and the view itself was thought to be at the time quite revolutionary and has indeed led to revolutionary consequences. Let me give an example of the way in which utilitarianism has a political dimension to it. Let's consider the application of utilitarianism to the question of taxation. How should taxation be determined? In a society where some people have more money than others, you can have different principles for deciding how much people should be taxed. You might decide according to who put the most work into the money that they have, and you tax people only according to that. So the people who put in lots of work are taxed less than those who don't put in very much work, or some other principle. Utilitarianism, though, says that you should tax people only according to the principle that says you select the taxation system which produces the greatest happiness for the greatest number. That will almost inevitably result in redistribution of taxes, because some people will have, since they'll have greater incomes and more taxable income, the money that's taken from them can then be distributed to others in order to increase their well-being. A taxation system which didn't do things that way, didn't redistribute at all, would, by utilitarian standards, fall short, because it wouldn't be distributing happiness across the population in general. It wouldn't produce the greatest happiness for the greatest number. It might just involve enormous amounts of happiness for a relatively small number of people. So the utilitarian view, you can see, is actually behind the basic structure of our current taxation systems, which are basically distributive taxation systems. In the case of the individual, if you're considering something like promises, we usually think of promises in terms of a rule that we have. If I make a promise to somebody, I must obey it, because otherwise the whole institution of promises breaks down. According to utilitarians, though, the justification for promising is solely in terms of its consequences. So in the case of a promise where breaking the promise might increase somebody's utility, say yours, so you promise to do something, you promise to go somewhere with somebody and it's raining outside and you're going to be miserable. So you think, well, actually, if I don't show up, then there'll be less happiness. There'd be more happiness in the world than if I do show up, because I'll be unhappy if I do show up. That's a sufficient reason to not fulfil your promise, according to a utilitarian. So utilitarian view has quite specific consequences for particular actions and how policy should be implemented. It's not just a philosophical view with no particular bite in terms of individual decision or public policy. Now, as I've explained this, I think you will start your mind will start moving in a certain direction. You will first of all hear the utilitarian view and you'll say, that sounds like a common sense and good view to me. The more I explain it, the more it will sound to you as if it's omitting something, if it's not quite giving you the whole picture. Why is that? Well, what it does is it omits entirely certain aspects of our usual view of morality, and in fact it's recommending that we reject those usual components of our morality, and we have to ask ourselves whether we should reject them. And there are several of these. I've mentioned one already. The question of motive or character. When we evaluate situations or people morally, we often evaluate their motives or their character. We don't just look at the consequences of their actions. We look at what kind of person they are, what kind of motives they have for doing what they do. If somebody is a callous, brutal, selfish person, we're critical of them morally. We don't just look at what the consequences are of what they do. We look at the kind of character that they have and the kind of motives that they act from. The utilitarian suggests that we shouldn't bother to look at that at all. It's not relevant. So for a utilitarian, there'd be no objection to somebody having a very unvirtuous, vicious character and having bad motives, so long as their actions never produced any harm. That for a utilitarian, there's no moral objection to that society. It's no different morally from a society in which people have good characters and good motives and produce the same kinds of consequences.